without which no one will see the Lord, looking carefully lest anyone fall short of the grace of God, lest any root of bitterness springing up cause trouble, and by this many become defiled, lest there be any fornicator or profane person like Esau, who for one morsel of food sold his birthright. For you know that afterward, when he wanted to inherit the blessing, he was rejected, for he found no place for repentance, though he sought it diligently with tears. For you have not come to the mountain that may be touched, and that burned with fire, and to blackness, and darkness, and tempest, and the sound of a trumpet, and the voice of words, so that those who heard it begged that the word should not be spoken to them any more, for they could not endure what was commanded. And if so much as a beast touches the mountain, it shall be stoned or shot with an arrow. And so terrifying was the sight that Moses said, I am exceedingly afraid and trembling.
But you have come to Mount Zion, to the city of the living God, the heavenly Jerusalem. You have come to thousands upon thousands of angels in joyful assembly, to the church of the firstborn, whose names are written in heaven. You have come to God, the judge of all, to the spirits of the righteous made perfect, to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood that speaks a better word than the blood of Abel. See to it that you do not refuse him who speaks. If they did not escape when they refused him who warned them on earth, how much less will we if we turn away from him who warns us from heaven? At that time his voice shook the earth, but now he has promised, once more I will shake not only the earth, but also the heavens. The words once more indicate the removing of what can be shaken, that is, created things, so that what cannot be shaken may remain. Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken, let us be thankful, and so worship God acceptably with reverence and awe. For our God is a consuming fire.
Right, here we go then. First of all, there's the two brothers, and I'm going back a little bit and backtracking on what Rob spoke to us about last week. But if we remember, the letter to the Hebrews was about or for people who were backtracking, who were going back. They'd been converted to Jesus Christ, but they were going back towards Judaism. We mortals have a talent for backsliding. It's an old word, comes from the 16th century, but it's true today, both for us as Christians and in other ways. In prison, they call the prisoners who come back time and time again, they call them recidivists. And one of my favorite programs, I'm not sure about Mary, is Porridge. I love looking at Porridge and seeing Norman Arthur Fletcher, is he? Coming back, he was the guy who knew the prison inside out, didn't he? Now, what was fundamental to Esau's backsliding? I think we should call it materialism. Perhaps it's stuff. You know, when you look through the Bible from beginning to the end, from the book of Genesis to the book of Revelation, stuff gets in the way of God's people. Adam and Eve, they were like Esau in as much that they worshipped their belly. They saw that apple, they thought it would be beautiful to eat. Then there was that guy Achan in the book of Joshua. He was in a battle. He saw some of the plunder that was being available, and he broke the word of the Lord. He took it. He hid it in his tent, and he had some awful consequences, both personally, for his family, and even for his nation. Esau wanted to swap the privileges of the firstborn, which was basically a very intangible thing at that moment, for a billy can of lamb stew. You can imagine him coming in from the field, exhausted. His stomach was rumbling. Jacob, on the other hand, he was a long-distance runner. His eyes were on the prize, like so many of the heroes in Hebrews 11. There was Abraham, for example. We read about him that he looked for a city with foundations whose architect and builder is God. That was long-termism, long-term thinking. And Jacob, you remember the story of how he got two brides for the price of one, but he worked. How long was it you were going out with Lucy, Rob? I wonder. Jacob worked for 14 years. Was that perseverance? Was that long-termism? I guess there's not many of us who could be that persistent and faithful in courting our partner. The firstborn had privilege. He received a third more than any other child. He had a special seat when the family were together. He was due to receive a blessing from his father, and on his father's death, he became the head of the family. There was no immediate benefit for him. It was for a future day. And candidly, we need to ask ourselves, as we think of the world in which we're living today, of our materialistic ambitions, our thinking. Even this past week, we've read about small particles of plastic that have been found inside plants, inside fish, and we're to blame in many ways for the materialistic way we live. Two brothers, one who is short-term, one who is long-term, and then two mountains. The first mountain we read about, or we had read to us about, was the Mount Sinai. That's verses 18 to 21 of Hebrews 12. Deep in the heart of these converts from Judaism were the Old Testament scriptures. They knew about Sinai. And in one such passage, when we're thinking about Moses getting the law handed to him for the people from God, it is terrifying. We hear that it was a place of fire, darkness, gloom, and storm. You wouldn't be going for a picnic there anytime quickly. It terrified the people. Even Moses, who'd had so many encounters with Pharaoh, he said, "I'm trembling with fear." And the writer of Hebrews is saying to his friends, "Do you really want to go back to this place? This must be a no-brainer." 2 Peter 2 is brutal. Backsliders are likened to a sow that has been washed, hosed down perhaps today, and then returns to wallow in the mud. Whereabouts are you? Are you looking for Mount Sinai? I doubt it very much. And then secondly, in the mountain category, we have a glorious mountain. We've got this passage about Mount Zion. These verses read more like a piece from a heavenly TripAdvisor. If you go to South Wales particularly, every little Welsh village, and North Wales too for that matter, seem to have its own Zion Chapel. I guess the founders of those chapels loved these words so much that they could think of nothing better than calling their church or their chapel Zion. And each of these inhabitants of this Mount Zion have a descriptor, an adjectival bit that tells you what these people were like. We've got here in the city of Jerusalem, in the city of Zion, we got the living God. And when you think about these readers of this epistle, these wayward, wavering Christians, they're told repeatedly in these verses, "You've arrived. You've come to Mount Zion. You've come to thousands of angels." And they must have thought to themselves, "Well, we're not there yet." But the writer was saying, you know, because of what God has done in your lives, you're as good as there. How can you possibly turn your back on it and lose the track? There's the myriad joyful worshiping angels. They were the same angels that sang at the birth of Jesus. They were busy guys. And right at the beginning of this book of Hebrews, we're told that the angels are spirits sent out to minister to us, to watch over us day by day. And then it's also the home of the church of the firstborn. And that's really interesting because we've heard about the firstborn, Esau, but every single one of us, because we're in the church of the firstborn, we're going to get privileges. We're going to get blessings poured out upon us. We've also heard that our names are written in heaven. And I remember as a kid wondering if my name was written in heaven. That's a precious thought. You know, when we get older, we begin to think about tomorrow and after tomorrow. And we must know with confident assurance that if we have trusted in Jesus, our names are written in heaven. Because we read then next, it's the home of God, the judge of all men. It's the home of the spirits of righteous men made perfect. And we can't unpack all of these expressions. But then finally, we come to Jesus, the mediator of a new covenant, and to the sprinkled blood, the blood that Jesus shed at Calvary, which speaks a better word than the blood of Abel. And these readers, they would know about Abel. They would know how he was slaughtered by his brother Cain in a jealous fight. But you know, Abel's blood cried out for justice, cried out for vengeance. But the blood that Jesus shed speaks to me about the reconciliation that he has made possible between God and mankind, between us individually, and speaks to us of not revenge, but restoration. Colossians 1:20 says, very pointedly, Jesus made peace through his blood shed on the cross. And finally, two or three earthquakes. If you read that last section carefully and followed it, you would hear about the earth being shaken. And later on, we read about the word, we read these words, once again, the earth can be shaken. It's also important that we read carefully, that we do not refuse him who speaks. Moses brought down the law from heaven, from God, and rejection of that law has continued to have serious consequences. We read, they did not escape. But then if we reject God's word from heaven, Jesus, we're even hazarding our lives more seriously. That is such a dangerous option. It's the Esau option if we want to reject Jesus and his words to us. You know, earthquake is often equated with God's judgment. When we read through, especially the latter half of the Old Testament, it's frequently referred to, and it may well have been that there were some serious earthquakes in the land. You know, for example, that Jerusalem is on the fault line that runs right down through Africa, through the Rift Valley and so forth. And now today, many people are asking what COVID-19 is all about. It certainly has been an earthquake. If you like, it's my third earthquake. It has shaken the entire world. When we hear and see about the numbers in this country who are being laid off, if we're thinking of so many businesses, which were the pride of men, Branson's Airlines, for example, What's this all about? Stuff, created things have been shaken. God's kingdom will not be shaken. And we read in the last verse that since God has given to us an unshakable kingdom, we must one. Let's be thankful. Let's be full of praise. Secondly, we must worship God acceptably with reverence and fear. For the writer says, our God is a consuming fire. I think it was Rob last week who said words something a bit like this. Esau took a prize which wouldn't last. He'd be hungry the next morning. Jacob chose an intangible crown that endured. And we've got a song now that Dee Dee has recorded, and it's written by a guy called Corey Voss, and the title is The God Who Moves Mountains. Thanks, Rob.